Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to this episode of Chick Flick Chat. I am Lucy Weston, your host, and I'm so happy that you're joining me. Thank you for that and welcome. As always, if you need to send me a suggestion or your opinions about the show, or you just want to send me a quick email and tell me what you think, or you know what you'd like to discuss with me in the future, please email me. Here we are with Lucy. com. You can find all of my links and my networking addresses right there at the main blog, as well as all of the other Chick Flick Chat shows. If you're new to Chick Flick Chat, you know that you might not know that I started the movie reviews on my other podcast, which is called Here We Are. It's the Here We Are talk show, and that was a spinoff of the blog. And at that location, I do interview experts, and we talk about women's issues and stuff. And originally, Chick Flick Chat started there, but it got really popular, and I started its own channel, and that's where you're finding me now at Blog Talk Radio, and I thank you for that. And you can also find me at iTunes. So if whichever way you're listening, or even if you're listening directly at the blog on the page for Chick Flick Chat, I appreciate that, and I hope you'll share it, give me a thumbs up or a rating. It's important, and then you can help other movie lovers find me and my reviews. So, the latest Woody Allen movie, Café Society. It's got a lot in it. You know, I try never to read the reviews before I do my own. And of course, you know, when you Google a little bit, you get little blurbs up on the front page of Google, and try not to look at it. And it seems like most people are reviewing the plot lines and maybe some of the acting, and I do talk about that. So I want to give you the spoiler alert that I do talk throughout the Chick Flick Chats about what goes on in the movie, and I do go right through to the end. But beyond the plot theme and just the acting and stuff, I really like to discuss the details of the film and the meanings. And Chick Flick Chat originally started out as a way to dish and detail films, women in roles in films, and those roles for women, and how that intersects in society, and you know, art imitating life, and life, you know, being represented, and all of those good things. So I'm going to do the same thing here, and this movie has a lot along those lines, and not just with the women's roles, but in terms of life. One of my favorite all-time movies is Midnight in Paris, and I'm not a huge Woody Allen fan, but I like him, and I like his work, and Midnight in Paris is a really wonderful film. It's definitely like a fantasy, and I did review that on Chick Flick Chat, so you can find that here at Blog Talk Radio as well. If you like Woody Allen, check that out, and let me know what you think. Okay, so Café Society, overall, I'll give you my rating is I liked it. I didn't love it. But what I did really like about it was all of these messages. And I'm not sure, you know, these are, when you do a review, it's sort of your own vision into things and how the filmmaker, in this case Woody Allen, is presenting stuff as the director. And we all love Hollywood, and if you're listening to this, you love Hollywood and you love movies, and I do too. The opening scene in the film is a fabulous, fabulous pool party at this house that has this, you know, it's just a gorgeous mansion in the Hollywood Hills, and the clothes, everyone is dressed up for a party and having a great time, and the maids are in full garb, and it's almost like a movie set. And I guess it's depicting that in the 30s, when this movie takes place, it is, you know, everything in the movie business was a movie, sort of, in and of itself, even in real life. So you're seeing one of the main characters, Steve Carell's character, Phil Stern, who's the head of a movie studio, and he's taking his phone calls and he's dropping names. And that's happening in Hollywood, while simultaneously in New York, you have the other protagonist, Bobby Dorfman, Phil Stern's nephew, wanting to go to Hollywood to start his life and get his job going. And that role is played by Jesse Eisenberg. And I love Jesse, and I think he's great. And if you haven't seen him in the Facebook movie, he was fabulous in that. So check that out. Throughout this film, you do see a lot of traditional women's roles. And of course, it is, you know, the 1930s, New York and Hollywood. And you see the mother role, and the sister who's also a wife, and the maid, and the secretary. And then you see a hooker. And the only woman who appears to have any kind of real job or be outside of the house and familial connections is Parker Posey's character, who is part of a modeling agency, and she and her husband, but she doesn't have it on her own. She's with her husband in that agency. And her name, though, is Rad, R-A-D. And at first it didn't hit me, and as I was making my notes for the show to talk to you, I thought, oh, my God, why did they name her that? And I never caught, if there was something in the film that I didn't catch about this, let me know. But I didn't catch why her name was that, but I thought was that it was a little, you know, homage to like a radically different woman in society at the time, and she's very glamorous all the time. But at the same time, she's also running girls, so to speak. You know, she's easy. She's talking about them being models and actresses, but she's also kind of offering them up as partners, or you know, almost as if they were the whores. So you know, it's one of those. She's duplicitous in her own role of what she's doing. And then, like I mentioned, a sister. He has a sister, Evelyn, and throughout the film, she's letter writing to him, which, of course, you know, there was no internet and things, and the phone calls were expensive. So she's always writing him. She's always writing her brother, Bobby Dorfman, letters. And in one of the first letters she's writing once he gets to California, is she's talking about the mother's advice, and she says, you know, it sounds like you're doing great. And remember what Mom said: live every day like it's your last. And someday you will be right. And I think out of the entire film, that was probably the best advice and something to take away, whether you love the film or you hate it. And it is very true. Live every day like it's your last, and someday you will be right. And, you know, we all talk about time, and certainly I write a blog and I'll focus on time and time management, and it's one of the things that I do. So it's I love that. I just thought it was good. I wanted to point that out and share that with you to keep that in mind. Another big theme throughout the movie is dreams. This idea of dreams. What are they? You know, it's what's the difference between the dreams and the reality? And you first start to experience that when he meets Vonnie, and she's, her real name's Veronica. She's the secretary to Phil Stern, and you meet her, and she tells him that he gets put together by the uncle so that she could take him around LA and get to know the town, and he falls in love with her, meaning Bobby does. And she says to him in one of their trips, they're looking at these homes in Beverly Hills, and she said, oh, my dream was when I came here was to live in a mansion with a pool. And that role is played by Kristen Stewart, who I'm not a huge fan of, but I really liked her in this, and I thought she seemed very sweet, and she was pretty in this, and very she did like a little, there's a switch that goes on with her, and it was a nice kind of a coy way, and you saw the thought pattern, and she remained likable, even though you don't necessarily like what she's doing. And she's youthful in the beginning, and she's innocent and almost virginal, even though we find out she's not. And she's always wearing a silk ribbon in her hair, which, okay, you know, that might have been the style then, but it's something that was, I think, more of a telling about the character was that silk ribbon. And I'll come back to that ribbon in a little bit. So it turns out, though, that Vonnie is having an affair. And there's a love triangle going on here between Vonnie with Uncle Phil and Bobby Dorfman. So both men are in love with her. She seems to be in love with both, but she's torn because, remember, her dreams. Phil represents money and power and house and mansion and pool, and Bobby is just this kid from New York doing errands. He's an errand boy at this point. And she's, you know, she's limited in terms probably of seeing the future with him and what she wants. So you're seeing this is all happening in Hollywood, and it was an interesting there's an interesting graininess to the feel of the film, or the look of it. It gives you, it's sort of an homage to the real films of the 30s, and it's nice because you kind of feel like the heat from it and LA and the sunshine and the way it is, and especially like as the light's going down. So he keeps getting sisterly advice, and he's moving forward with Vonnie, he thinks, but he's not really, and she tells him she has this boyfriend, and then she says we have to only be friends, and she lies about the boyfriend, says it's Doug, who's like a traveling journalist or something like that, and he doesn't realize it for the longest time that Doug is actually Uncle Phil. And Uncle Phil is struggling with his own ideas of marriage and commitment, and because he wants to divorce his wife of 25 years, and he's he's in this internal struggle about how do you leave a wife that's basically been perfect for this young girl. And so that's a whole other thing about betrayal. So besides his sister, he's got a brother. Bobby has a brother named Ben, which is played by Corey Stoller. And in this film, I think that Corey Stoller was wasted. He is a very, very good actor. While he did a great job in this movie, there wasn't enough for him to do. I kept feeling like, when are we going to see more of Ben? When are we going to see Corey Stoller? And Corey Stoll. If you know Corey Stoller, you don't know him, you can check him out. Also in Midnight in Paris, he played Ernest Hemingway. And he did do a stint on House of Cards on Netflix. I think it was second or third season, and he did a great job in that film. Everything he does, he's just a stellar actor. So in this movie, when you see it, if you haven't already, you're going to see what I mean about that. If you know him, that he's good in this, but it's not enough. You wanted to see more of him. I felt like Woody Allen kind of wasted him, and maybe that was an editing choice or just that he was supposed to be the peripheral of the movie and the subtext of what was going on. But really, his role, he's sort of the, in my opinion, in this movie, even though it's like a Cain versus Abel where it's Bobby versus Ben, Bobby being, you know, being the good brother, Ben being the bad brother because he's involved in racketeering and murder and all these things, he's supporting the family. He's giving the money out. He's helping the sister when the sister's having a problem with the neighbor. He's supporting the parents. He's starting this club, which eventually Bobby comes back and makes a life at. So really, he's the integral character in that family, although it is his role in the film is almost like a subplot, but that underlying, which I guess where I'm going with this, I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but that underlying life of vice, let's call it, that's going on below the surface is sort of what goes on in Hollywood and obviously in New York, but he's supporting all of this, and everyone else in the film is living what we consider more of a normal life or masked in other things. And his activities, he does get his comeuppance, and I'll get to that. But he's sort of the basis of all this, what's going on, because without him, they wouldn't be having all these other experiences. So, okay, let me go on about that. All right, get off of that. All right, so at some point, Vonnie and Uncle Phil break up, and it's about the time where she gives him a love letter from Rudolph Valentino. And again, we have imagery that, you know, Rudolph Valentino was known to be supposedly a great Latin lover, and he was supposed to charm all the women, but there was also the underlying message about or belief about Rudolph Valentino was that he was gay. And not that there's anything wrong with that. But in terms of this film, she's giving Phil a letter professing her love using a letter that who knows who it was actually written to, but they're not seeing him for perhaps what he really was as a person. And they are buying into the whole image of Rudolph Valentino being this fabulous lover and heterosexual and everything that he was promoted to be in the movies, the studio system. And she gives it to him at their one-year anniversary, which is paper, which I thought, oh, that's interesting that they're making it the one-year anniversary because paper burns. Paper burns easily, you know, and it's and you get burned in love. And so there's some other things going on there. So the rumor of Rudolph Valentino's homosexuality, I kind of thought it was like, oh, all right, this is interesting that Woody Allen chose him. Of all the stars at that time, the big-name stars, why did he pick him to have that letter? Was it just another layer of falsehood that Hollywood perpetuates, you know, representing a dream of romance and love and eternal happiness? And even though they're in the business, they don't even look beyond what the whole, glitter and imagery that Hollywood puts out. You know, so what are the rest of us to think if they're in the business and the Uncle Phil doesn't even know what the rumors are at the time? Because most people probably did know. You know, it's the Rock Hudson thing. So, all right. Again, it brings us back to visualization. You know, how do you see your life and the dreams and these paradigms that dreams are sort of replicated under what things are supposed to be like or what you want, you know, or, oh, if I have this big house with a pool, I'll be happy. If I'm wearing those fancy clothes, I'll be happy. And that doesn't necessarily equate, you know. So all of this is going on. She kind of gets back with Bobby. Then Uncle Phil decides he wants to leave his wife finally, and she makes the choice. She comes to New York. She's working as a coat check girl. And in that moment, she's still wearing the ribbon, and she's got these cute little gloves on with her dress, and it's almost very childlike. Uncle Phil, you know, professes his love, says he wants to marry her, and she tells Bobby in the course of the plot that she is going to marry Uncle Phil. And Uncle Phil basically says, you know, I think he said to Bobby, I want to take care of her for the rest of her life, which again is a very old marital pattern or paradigm or belief that, you know, the man will marry you and take care of you forever and everything will be wonderful and you'll go off into the sunset. Again, very Hollywood-esque. You know, and there's an issue of confidence. You know, she has the roommate. Phil has Bobby, even though Bobby doesn't realize it for part of the situation, that it's Vonnie that they're talking about, you know, with the other woman. And then Vonnie's confiding in Bobby but telling him falsehoods. So all of these, the sister writing to Bobby, there's a lot of, like, confidant, who's telling what, almost like a telephone game. You know, you get the story, but you're not getting all the story. You're not getting all the words. And you're getting people's perception of things and what they want you to know. And again, you know, back to Hollywood. What do they want us to know? What do they want us to see or believe or buy into? So there's something about the properness going on throughout the film, and that certainly was, you know, what we think of, and who knows, I wasn't alive in the 30s, of what was happening. You know, people were proper, they dressed proper, and they acted properly, and you pretended you were proper, even if you weren't, and that's going to bring us back to New York. You know, with all the betrayal going on, and then there's the issues of character and loyalty, and what does it all mean when it comes down to love? And somebody in the film, and my notes, I don't know who said it, but it says emotions are not rational. And, you know, you follow your heart kind of a thing, and sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it ends up not being a good thing. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if you follow your heart, it could be the best thing for you, or if you don't follow your heart and you follow your dreams, which is what Vonnie's doing here to get that house and that pool and all those other things, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work out for the best. It could, but it doesn't mean it will. So the New York perspective, they're back on the East Coast. Bobby comes back. He starts his life working in Ben's club, which when he gets there, it's called The Hangover. And that was just like a brief little throwaway line, but I think it was integral to the whole thing about Ben's life and how he sees things and does and acts out and, you know, basically does whatever he wants. Club that's fabulous and all these people are there drinking every night. And he's calling it The Hangover because he's telling the truth. It's the New York thing where, you know, you cut through the bullshit and you tell the truth. It's The Hangover. In comes Bobby with his Hollywood experience, and he renames the club Le Tropique. So he gives it this French feel, and, you know, and I'm a Francophile, so anything I fall for it. Anything that's got, like, French on it, I'm like, oh, what is it? So, you know, I guess the idea in the film was that you stamp something French, and especially at that time, it seemed very exotic and foreign and fabulous and Parisian. So they're at Le Tropique, and the club starts to do, you know, gangbusters. It's just doing, no pun intended, it's just doing fabulously, even though the sort of the gang is running it from underneath, but people who are attending don't necessarily know it. And you have this Hollywood influence that comes in now, and it becomes very glittery and beautiful, and everything is pretty, including this woman who walks in one day, and Bobby sees her, and Rad, Parker Posey's character, is in the club and introduces them, and it turns out to be Blake Lively's character. Her name is Veronica Hayes. So she's got the same name as Vonnie. And at first I was like, well, why would they have done that in the writing? But the more I thought about it, it was so obvious. I'm like, Lucy, of course, Because in Hollywood, when you have a biopic or, you know, a biographical depiction of someone, they recast the role. And how do they recast the role? They always recast it with the perfect woman or the perfect man, the dream state of something. You know, they're taller, they'll be prettier, thinner, whatever it is. You never see in Hollywood or any of these biographies, even into today's, you know, time, you don't see, like, they don't take somebody and put a worse looking actor than the actual person. It's always someone who's better looking. And here comes beautiful Blake Lively, tall and blonde and gorgeous. And even though Kristen Stewart is very attractive in her own right, she's not that silky, sexy, blonde, Hollywood glamour, you know, image, that Veronica Lake type thing. And when you do first see her, she's in this gorgeous silver gown with the rhinestone bracelets and hair pieces and the clips and really, really beautiful. My grandmother would have gone crazy for it. I think it's beautiful even now. She really looks pretty. And she's another issue, you know, she's got her own things as a woman where she talks about if she got pregnant or she thinks she's pregnant going to Mexico for an abortion. So it gives you a little bit of the status of women at the time and women's rights, what was going on, without going into it too much. So and then in terms of women, again, I want to bring it back to the sister Evelyn, who suffers from migraines. And at that time, you know, that was a woman's thing. If you had a migraine, you were a woman. And it was a female affliction. And she's got this passive husband, Leonard, who's smart and heady, and he's, you know, he wants to work things out with this mean neighbor. And of course, Ben takes care of the neighbor, and it's the whole underlying, you know, you don't get things done with your brains, you get it done with your fists kind of thing. And so Bobby marries Veronica too, and he's calling her Vonnie, his recast perfect woman. And they have a baby, and he's running the club, and things are going well, and everyone knows him, so he's sort of the star now. And in walks Uncle Phil and the original Vonnie, married, and she's now wearing, she's traded in her silk ribbon, and she's wearing a diamond tiara band on her head. So she went from, you know, silk to diamonds, which was what sort of her dream was, and she's at the table and she's name dropping, and Bobby's surprised and disappointed, but at the same time he ignores all the signs and signals. And it's almost like what he did the first time in Hollywood when he met her. He ignored all the signs and signals that she wasn't around. She stood him up, and then she had this boyfriend and all those things. But he did it again and again. Is that, you know, it's emotions are not rational. So you let your emotions get in the way and you don't see what's right in front of you. And he's seeing all, he knows it. He does even say, you know, who is this? And you see his disappointment, but he still wants to be with her. He still obviously cares about her. So Ben's legal issues are still going now, and they're really ramping up. And Vonnie says to Bobby, you know, can we turn back the clock and take a walk? And you know, it's that idea, can you go home again? It's that always that dream you think about, can you go home again? And everybody says, no, you can't go home again. I don't know. I'm not here to say whether you can or not. Something for you to think about. So, again, we're seeing actions have consequences. And they go out, and Vonnie won, and Bobby go, and they kind of live out a little episode of what they thought their New York life was going to be. You know, she makes some spaghetti and meatballs at an Italian restaurant, and they take a horse and carriage ride in New York, and they do all those things. And they're happy, and they're in that moment, and they're kind of living what they thought they were going to live years earlier, even though it's not really reality. So, but there, you know, there is a philosophy out there, or I guess maybe people know, I'm not a scientist, but that the brain doesn't know the difference between imagination and reality, if all things are being equal in terms of the detail. So maybe that's what it is, that they are having their reality, or this is another layer of things. Bobby and Vonnie, they kiss on a bridge. And the thing that hit me at that point, they're in New York, Central Park, they're kissing on this bridge. And I realized that there was, every time you saw them in an intimate outdoor setting, there was water around them. There were images of the ocean and the rocks. They were always on the beach in California. And now here they are in New York, and they could have been kissing anywhere in New York. But they're kissing on this bridge in Central Park with a pathway to, like, the horizon behind them. And I want to think a little bit more on that, but I just wanted to point that out to you. If you do see the movie, just keep it in mind. Let me know what you think of why Woody Allen chose those locations. So Ben gets arrested during all of this is going on, and he gets arrested for racketeering and murder and, you know, stealing and, you know, burglary, whatever it is. And it's all the vices. And he gets the death penalty. And his execution actually makes the club boom and go crazy. And they're so crowded. And again, it's the idea of all press is good press. You know, the execution of Ben, it makes it a very exotic place to go. And, you know, and it's interesting because the people that are coming to the club, you know, this nightclub in New York, which normally people think of New York as more gritty, here you have this bubble of Hollywood happening at this cafe, you know, or La Tropique. And the reality is that all of these people that are coming, they're all masked by their diamonds and their money. And when in the film, they're showing you the people who are attending, you know, and showing up all the time. And these are people who frequented the club all the time with dubious reputation and or of ill repute, but they're draped in their jewels and they're acting sophisticated and proper. And again, it's the idea of acting proper a certain way and you'll be proper. It's all a veil. It's a cover. It's an image that obscures reality. It just changes. And it's a really, what I said earlier in this chick flick chat was that this movie, you know, instead of the stars really being the stars, it's the ideals and the dreams and the jobs and the careers and the marriage and the money and the love, and that the movie and the vices, that it's all masked in Hollywood glamour. And it's a delve into what are dreams and what dreams versus reality. And again, visualization. And even the film ends, I think, on the line, dreams are dreams, but you know, you can make your dreams into reality, or at least the way you want to live. And it does really bring home the idea of choices and crossroads. And when you make a choice and you go down that path, how does it, that's a thought about the pathway on the bridge. You know, where does it bring you? Where do you end up? And do you end up just living a life and remembering your dreams, or, you know, taking little snippets of it? And that's sort of what it seems like Bobby ends up doing and Vonnie ends up doing ultimately, where they got what they wanted essentially, but it isn't quite what they thought it was going to be. He's got the secondary Vonnie, and she's got Uncle Phil and the house and the pool and the diamonds, but it's not Bobby, and there's something missing there. So you have to live with your decisions, and with Ben dying with his decisions, it's a flip-flop of both life. And there is a discussion in the film with the two parents about the afterlife and Judaism and not believing in the afterlife. But it was interesting that in the film you see so many choices that I thought, oh, are they saying that if you don't have the afterlife, if you died, but you're in this life and you make choices, you have an afterlife on earth from those choices and decisions. So you get your afterlife while you're essentially living, and sometimes that's hell. Sometimes it's heaven. You just don't know how it is, and that's all predicated on the choices that you make. So, okay, I really liked it overall, I guess, now that I'm talking to you. I think I liked it now more than I'm telling you and having this chick flick chat with you. And again, you know, if you like my chick flick chats, please think about, you know, subscribing to the show and joining me, follow me here, you know, here, or, you know, give me a nice rating, share a tweet, you know what to do. And you can always find me at herewearewithlucy.com. I'm so happy that you joined me, and I will be doing more chick flick chats in the future. I know it took a little hiatus, but I'm back and I'm really excited to be talking to you again. And I look forward to that. So let me know your thoughts and enjoy the film. And I don't know what the next movie will be, but I do have some good ideas and I saw some promos coming. So I will be taking a peek at some of those, as well as some more Netflix and some series. And if you're not watching Ray Donovan on Showtime, I highly recommend it. So that's my little take for today. And be well until next time. Thanks so much. I'm Lucy Weston.